Hello, we're underway. Alongside Will and Logan, it's Pat, the Big Show Thursday edition. Your four-hour afternoon extravaganza starts now. And, gents, I thought Chris Versteeg had some really interesting comments with the boys yesterday morning. So Versteeg joins Boomer in the Morning every Wednesday. And yesterday morning, just listen to this clip from Versteeg. I think he gets to the core of where this team is right now and where this team is going, what this team is missing, and what needs to happen. Here's Chris Versteeg from yesterday morning with Boomer and the Gang.
Tell me if I'm wrong. I know last summer I was vouching for him, but TJ Brody, you know, watching that game last night, you really realize how much Calgary misses a guy who can move the puck from his own end. And yeah, I know TJ would give up the puck at times, but what TJ does so well, I believe it was on that Matthews goal where Ryan and Nordstrom went right at TJ. It was a turnover at the blue, and he just sprung the puck up, and they had a 3-on-2. You're missing that pass game in and game out. And that's what TJ does better than anybody. He did better than anybody in Calgary. And that's why him and Gio work so well together, is because Gio would get it over to him. He'd make that pass, or the puck would be in the corner and Brody would make a little backhand pass and they were gone. So it was just, you're missing that efficient puck moving defenseman. So now who do you move for an efficient puck moving defenseman, or do you go find one on the open market? That's what I think you need to do. I think you need to go out. You need to find a centerman. Now you move Lindholm to the wing. If that's what you do, you trade Gaudreau, you try to bring in a centerman, you can move Lindholm to the wing. I'm giving a lot of options out here.
Yeah, I know.
Just watching this team, you need to shore up the center. You need to find a real good puck moving D-man to play with Gio. I know Anderson's supposed to be that. Anderson to me is more of an offensive D-man from the blue line in. Brody's more of an offensive D-man from his own goal line to the red line. He's the one who makes those good outlet passes. So I feel like you got to find guys like that. And who are you going to move in order to do it? Now, are you going to move a young guy, Dubé? Or is it right now that, because he's being flexed on clearly, right? He's not confident. He's not playing well. And I have no problem with Daryl flexing on him and showing like, hey, you got to earn your ice time. But is that a guy that you can dangle out for one of these players?
So that is Versteeg yesterday. And for him, Will, and I completely agree. Like I completely agree with what the needs are: a top puck moving defenseman and a number one center. Like those two.
But just to push back on the clip, Pat. Yeah. And you know, for me, like, is TJ Brody not being here the reason why the season's gone the way it's gone?
Well, that part was less of where I was going with it,
sure.
Will, that's less of, I do think Brody's having a heck of a season in Toronto and he's been a really good fit with Riley. And I think that he had himself a pretty good season last year in Calgary. Was very good.
This
in the
team
bubble,
misses him. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying that if we're painting it just to one guy leaving, well, I disagree with that.
No. And that's not where I'm painting it for sure.
Okay.
And the thing that I guess it was the back half of that clip, and I left the Brody part in because it kind of framed him going into what they need. And whether it's Brody or somebody else, I think that the point that I, or the biggest takeaway that I had from that, is that right now there is a glaring need for top pairing kind of really good defensemen. Maybe you could even say number one defenseman. And there's clearly a need for a number one center. And I agree completely that those are the two biggest needs that this Flames team has. But here is my rhetorical question to you listening, not so much to you, Will, because I know where we both stand on this, but to you listening, my question is, where do you find that? And I don't know if you just find that on the trade market or in free agency. I'm quite skeptical that is readily available. Those two things that are so missing on this team right now, and that, Will, are kind of the two paramount or most paramount things, two of the most paramount things in building a Stanley Cup contender. You don't necessarily just go find those things on the open market, you know? And that's why I think that clip frames the dilemma and the spot that the Flames are in right now. They have got very big needs at the most important positions in the game, And the question then becomes, how do you go about acquiring or procuring those things? And for me, the most realistic way to do that is by drafting them, developing them, and usually you have to be drafting pretty high to be able to get those type of players.
Yeah, and I don't know where you stand on this, Pat, and if I'm putting words in your mouth that are false, please interrupt and tell me how wrong I am. But, you know, that's why I have been so ignorant or opposed to the Jack Eichel conversation, because I don't think this team has the horses to be getting a Jack Eichel. Like, Dylan Dubé and a first-round pick, to me, doesn't get you a Jack Eichel. And you know, anybody that Versteeg just named, to me, doesn't get you those players. And so
for sure,
that's why I've been so steadfast on this team needs to completely reset. I don't feel there's a core under the core. You can add pieces, you can layer on top or do whatever, but you're going to stay in the middle. And I remain in that opinion. And we saw it this year, Pat. I know that you were a big advocate for it and probably still are. And I'm not saying that he's poor at it, but this team tried essentially to fill their number one center need with a winger in Elias Lindholm. And did it work for times? Sure. But I think it's been very clear that, you know, while he's a very, very, very good player,
he's a good center, man. But he's absolutely not like he's not a number. He has not shown that he is that elite number one guy.
Exactly. And this team wanted him to be that when he hadn't been that in the past. And so you're asking people to fill in holes that really are probably above their shoes right now. And again, I think at times he has shown that, yes, a very good center. And I think he can play center full time and, quite frankly, could be a top six center in the NHL for the next decade. But again, if you're looking for those difference makers, he's not that guy. And so, yeah, it's a really tough spot to be in, because the biggest areas of need are ones that are pretty impossible to get in trade, no matter who you have to offer up. So that's not, I'm not trying to be super disrespectful to Dylan Dubé, but Pat, we talk about it all the time, whether it's Dubé or Mangiapane or Valimaki or any of these young kids across the NHL. It's very rare for you to, you know, have a package to be able to acquire number one center without giving up something quite significant. And that's why you're hearing, whether you believe it or not, it's why you're hearing the names of, you know, the likes of Quinton Byfield and some of the higher end first round picks previously in potential trades involving Jack Eichel.
And so, I mean, if you want to go down the Eichel road, and that, okay, you could sell me on, and I believe that there is absolutely a world where Eichel coming to the Flames, you could convince that meme that makes sense. And you know, mm-hmm. About a month and a half ago, or whenever it was, we had that conversation. And I think that that is a guy that fills one of those two needs and is still in an age range where you could build around him. But there's no doubt that the package is going to be significant. Like, we're talking about prospects and one or maybe two first-round picks and a pretty darn good roster player that's going to need to come from your team as well. So it's not
as good,
like,
as Eichel is, you're probably still staying in the middle, right? I mean, that's not with having that many holes for one guy. And, you know, I just feel like it would set you back further, in my opinion. But,
and realistically, like, okay, let's just say that the Flames were to aggressively pursue Eichel this offseason. I still, like, do I think that there is a good chance of the Flames acquiring Eichel? No, I don't. I think it's a worthy conversation to have, but I don't think that he is realistically coming here. So to get that top puck-moving D-man, where there's a few of them in the top end of this year's draft, for instance, or to get that number one center, I think you got to draft him and you got to develop him. And that's why we're having all these big picture conversations right now. Look, I'll be perfectly honest. I think Elias Lindholm's one of the top 20, 25 centers in the NHL. I really do. I think he's that good a center iceman, but there's a tier or two in those 20 or 25 guys. There's clearly, like, the elite tier where McDavid and maybe one or two other guys are sitting. Then there's that group with Bergeron or O'Reilly or those type players. And then there's another drop. And I would say that for me, Lindholm is kind of in that third tier where you absolutely want those guys on your team. And hell, for his salary, you build around guys on that team. But he's not that guy, at least hasn't been, and we're talking about him being, what, 26, 27 years old soon, he's not that true, bona fide, no questions asked, number one center. Hell of a hockey player, but to get those guys, yeah, I think the most realistic way to do it is to draft it, and that's why I heard that clip. We played it in the 5 o'clock hour yesterday, and we're playing it again here today. I hear that clip from Versteeg, and it's just like, yep, yep, and I wonder if there is any other way to get those things, but it's why this reset or rebuild conversation is such a fervent, important one right now. I think Zeri's a great prospect, and I think he's going to be an NHLer, but is he that guy? Probably unfair to say that he is. You probably need to draft in the top five to get one of those two guys, so... Yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to kick off the show with that clip, Will, because it really does frame where we are when talking about this Flames team and where a lot of people, not everybody, and I know that opinions are different, but where a lot of people are with where this Flames team needs to be going in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, it's what I've been saying. I love it. It's like Versteeg has been listening to our show. It's what I've been saying for 2+ months. This team is in a really tough spot. They can try to patch it up with duct tape, that massive hole in the side of the barrel here, or they can, you know, let the barrel completely drain and reset. I don't know which way they're going to go. It's not my money. It's not my bottom line. I've got to worry
about. Your job's not on the line, all that.
Exactly. All that. It's easy for me to sit here on the radio and say that, but, I truly believe, again, just looking at the evidence, mm-hmm. this team has been trying to do that model for 25 years. And what has it gotten you?
I
would argue nothing.
Pretty close. Couple of playoff appearances. But the last thing that I'll say is it seems like there's this taboo around talking about this. It seems like there's this taboo about talking about resetting or rebuilding. It's not a bad thing. Whether Brad Treliving's the guy to do it or another general manager's the guy to do it, I don't know. I don't know what the organization's going to do at the end of the year, but it's not like it's a bad thing. You gave it a real good go. You drafted some good players. Sean Monahan is having a down season. I get that. Sean Monahan's an excellent NHL player or has had an excellent NHL career for a 6th overall pick. And Johnny Gaudreau has turned into a hell of a player for getting him as an unknown quantity as a 4th-round pick. And so they've been able to do some really nice things. Anderson looks like a piece going forward, and Hanifin looks like a piece going forward. Lindholm, they've given it a really solid go, but it hasn't worked. And if you just keep on trying to make this cycle work, I think you set yourself back. That's my opinion. But it's not like this is a bad or an insulting thing to talk about. This is what running a hockey team is about. You took your shot. You take your shot. You took your shot. It didn't work. So you go back to the drawing board and you try it out again. And I don't think that needs to be a taboo conversation. Well, I really don't. And it feels like in some spots, it can be that taboo conversation. This didn't work. It isn't working. It hasn't worked. What's wrong with resetting and trying again? That's what teams have to do in a salary cap world. And if you don't, then you put yourself in a much worse situation.
Yeah, some of them do. Some obviously haven't.
You're right. The ones that haven't, yeah. They just put themselves in a bad spot.
You know, and I've said this numerous times. There's no guarantee it works. I fully understand that. But try something new. Try something different. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm kind of advocating for. And we'll have to wait and see what happens here.
Underway on the big show this afternoon with Will. I'm Pat. Logo here with us as well. We're here in the Iconic Studio on a Thursday afternoon. Iconic Studio is powered by Iconic Electric and Controls Maintenance. It's Iconic. Visit iconicec.ca to find out more. I've been thinking a lot about where the Flames are right now. And you know, once we get past the trade deadline, there's no doubt that you're going to get a different feel on this radio station in terms of the conversations we're having. Once the trade deadline's passed and we kind of know what this roster is going to look like, I think there's going to be more of a focus on the draft, more of a focus on Stockton, more of a focus on young players and the bigger picture building for next year. So knowing that we're,
just to stop you there really quick, you mentioned how different the roster looks. Are you expecting this team to subtract bodies in the next 4 days? Because I'm not.
I'm expecting them to try. I don't know how confident I am that they're actually going to be successful because, as we've talked about, this is a messed up trade market. So I think they're going to try, and we'll see if they can hit on a couple of them. But no, I would not suggest, even just talking to people around the league, and I would not suggest that, you know, I wouldn't be putting my life savings on the Flames making three deals on Monday. They're going to try. I really do think they're going to grind it. I just don't know if this is the, if it happens, great. And I think that's what they need to do. And I think that they have to aggressively pursue it, but whether or not they're able to, I think that's going to, I'm less confident about that this year than I would be any other year. How's that?
Okay. I just wanted to clarify, cause I'm with you. I don't know what they're going to be able to do. I hope they try, but we'll have to kind of wait and see. I think Derek Ryan is probably the most likely candidate outside of that.
Him and Bennett would be the two for me.
Yeah, but the way that this organization talks and the way that I have no idea how to read the Bennett situation. No clue.
So we're now 2 years removed from Calgary entering the playoffs as the number one seed in the Western Conference. It was 2 years ago, right around this time. We're moving up to it on this date in Flames history, for instance, that the Flames played game one, won that game one 4-0 over Colorado. This city was buzzing. Flames fans were feeling more excited about their group than they had in literally 15 years since the 2004 Stanley Cup run. And now here they are 2 years later, 16 games left. They're completely out of it. And it is shocking to think how things have changed in just 2 years. And it feels way longer because we've also lived through a continuing pandemic that has just blown everybody's life right up. But it is only 2 years and two seasons removed. And I've really been thinking about just how much that Colorado five-game series loss has been a turning point, Will. And I honestly don't know where you are on this. You and I talk so often off the air. I know where you are on and how you feel about so many things. I honestly don't know how you feel about this. I just, for me, it just feels like everything that went down in that series and the way things went from on such a high to on such a low, it just feels like organizationally, that was a massive, massive turning point. The way they were beaten so soundly, I think it absolutely kicked the crap out of confidence and belief in some players. On top of that, I think Colorado provided this very, very strong and somewhat simple blueprint to play against some of Calgary's top players. And since that point, It just hasn't been anywhere near the same. The next season started in a poor fashion, coaching change forced upon them, the Dallas exit, and now here we are with this mess of a season. I just wonder how much, and we'll never know, but I honestly believe, Will, that five-game series loss for so many different reasons was such a massive organizational turning point in terms of how it goes on the ice and some of the ways different players perceive themselves and how they need to play, all that type of stuff. I really think it was a massive turning point. It turns out it has not been, at least in the 2 years that have passed, a positive turning point for this organization.
Yeah, I don't know. I sort of agree and I sort of disagree because I think it's really easy, Pat, I think, to look at that as the turning point, you know, to push back and to put it back on you. Like, if the Bill Peters situation doesn't happen, who knows how the rest of that season goes?
It wasn't going
obviously
very well.
The pandemic after that, you know, there's a lot of what ifs. I think it's very convenient to look back and say that was the turning point because, again, it was a gentleman's sweep in the playoffs. Your top players weren't good enough. And really, since the All-Star game that season, you had been kind of limping into the playoffs at about a 500 record. The first half of the year was so good that it, you know, allowed you to kind of take your foot off the gas and play the way they did. So, I'm torn on it because I think it's very obvious when you look at it and say, okay, yeah, that was obviously a turning point for this team. And, you know, you probably should have made changes and all of that. But they bring in Bill Peters for a year. They win the conference. It doesn't go the way that they expected or wanted to in the playoffs. And you've seen what Colorado has done since. And I think for a lot of people, that season, Colorado probably wasn't an 8 seed when it's all said and done. They were obviously way better than that. So it was a bad matchup. And the way the season had gone, you probably, if you're Brad True living in the Flames, you weren't really going to change anything, despite the fact from the outside you can look and say, once again in the playoffs, your star players didn't perform. So I'm torn on it, Pat, because I see it both sides, but I just think it's a little too convenient to be like, okay, that's when this team should have made some changes, you know?
Well, I'm not even saying so much that. It's more just that I wonder how much that messed with the overall mindset of the organization.
For me, 14-15 did that, Pat, because they made a bunch of trades at the 15 draft, correct? After
they made the one deal. They brought in Dougie Hamilton. That was the big deal they made, which I still
don't.
The
year after was Hamonic,
correct?
I think
it's a big deal. Yes, the year after was Hamonic when they missed the playoffs.
So, I guess for me, because, you know, you were, what, 2 years removed from trading Ginlaw and kind of hitting the reset button. We just talked about 10 minutes ago the reset button here and how it's not a bad thing. Well, like, for me, this organization made the playoffs in 14-15, and ownership in the front office had wide eye saucers and said, okay, this is now our time to take off. And maybe that wasn't the consensus inside the front office, and that's just me. My speculation on it. I could be wildly inaccurate by that belief, but I think the 14-15 season did a lot worse for this organization than 18-19, but certainly 18-19 did not help, especially when you were that dominant and had 50-plus wins in the regular
season. It's less about doing favors. I just really do wonder about what it did in terms of how teams play this team, oppose this team. That's number one. And number two, I wonder what it did for the swag or the confidence of Gaudreau hasn't been the same. Gaudreau and Monahan, they weren't playing as well down that stretch. Lindholm too, because we all talk about what happened when they came back from the All-Star break or the CBA break that year. And it's true. The record wasn't great and that line wasn't great, but they were still putting up points. And they were still a very, very potent power play. And then it completely dried up. And Gaudreau did nothing. Monahan did nothing in that playoff series. I just wonder what it did for the psyche of certain guys. And I also wonder how it provided a blueprint for other teams. It's like, okay, well, look what Colorado did in five games against Calgary. I get why you're saying it's a convenient narrative, but I think the results are too stark, and what has happened since is too stark for me not to say that there's something at least a little bit to it, if that makes any sense. I do.
Yeah, and that's why I see it from both sides. Like, I think it's very convenient. Don't get me wrong. It's low-hanging fruit, but it's also, you know, fairly accurate because, yeah, since that series, essentially, and if you want to go back, as you mentioned, to the All-Star break, you probably could when you look back at the numbers. But, yeah, it's very safe to assume and safe to make the call that, you know, a lot of these guys, specifically their top players, have not been the same since then. And, you know, obviously Gaudreau and Monahan are the top of that list. And that was the other thing, too, is that 18-19 season, every single player on that team had a career year. So
set expectations, or I wonder, I don't know, but I wonder if that set expectations, like, internally for guys. And I wonder how much certain guys are still tied to that season. Gaudreau, Monahan would be the two that I point to. I just wonder how much you're like, well, I had 99 points that year and now it's not half. I wonder how much that remains a mental battle, you know?
100%.
Let's close out the segment with this, just because it's great Daryl Sutter audio. And you know what? It's a negative time right now. So let's just, we need a little levity. Here's Daryl Sutter again at practice today. The line of Johnny Gaudreau, Elias Lindholm, Matthew Tkachuk from left to right was together. So looks like that's the way they're going to start on Saturday when the Flames play the Edmonton Oilers. One more practice before then. But Daryl Sutter asked about those two guys, Tkachuk and Gaudreau, on the same line with one another, what he needs to see. Just listen to the exchange with Daryl Sutter today.
Daryl, we've seen Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk together over the last 2 days. What do you think, you know, they can unlock in each other if they are sort of on a line?
Need some offense out of them. Pretty clear.
So what do you think, how do they complement each other in a way that could bring that offense about?
Well, they've played together in the power play since Christ was a child, so they should be able to do it 5-on-5.
Look, it's going to be a rough finish to the season But if we can get more gold from Daryl Sutter like that, Will, then I think at the very least it'll be an entertaining finish to the regular season. Between the quote a couple weeks ago about Johnny and his 500th game and now this one going back to biblical times. I love it. Well, at the very least, Daryl's given us some gold.
As Haley Salvian put on Twitter, because she quoted tweeted that quote and then followed it up by her editor who used to cover the LA Kings, Rich Hammond, says it's not new for Daryl to make this type of analogy, because when they were playing on the road in Nashville, March 3rd, 2012, was asked about the tough job in front of him playing at Bridgestone Arena. He says, quote, they haven't lost at home since Christ was a child. So he likes to pull those out every once in a while. The other one that comes to mind that I know you love, Pat, is the John Gibson. He's the greatest goalie I've ever seen. Surprised we got one by him tonight. So yeah, he's great. Obviously, the back and forth with our pal John Rosen.
Are you deaf?
There's a lot of great one-liners by the man Daryl Sutter.
I'm not gonna lie. And who knows? Because we know that Daryl listens to this station a lot. I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes I get intimidated when I ask him a question on Zoom because I don't want to get my teeth kicked.
Intimidated in. More, Daryl Sutter, Brian Burke.
Whew.
It's Burke for me, not close.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think it'd probably be on... I think probably Burke, too, just because, I don't know. I know that Burke was a big listener of the station when he was here, too, so, like, I don't know.
I'm more just presences. Brian Burke, because he's so gruff, and I've actually had times with Daryl where it's been laid back and fun. So
that's why I think I'd go with Burke too. Like Brian Burke crushed me. I was because Berkey, much like Daryl, but Berkey is a huge advocate of Special Olympics and every year with their Breakfast of Champions and I cannot wait till we do that again. By the way, but. Just, I remember interviewing him as a panel on a panel conversation for the Special Olympics Calgary Breakfast of Champions. And I just remember, like, Berkey was crushing me at a charity event in front, like, just like, that's an awful question. I was like, oh my goodness. Like, yeah, you can. So, you know what? I think because you're right, I don't know if I've had a lot of laid back moments around Brian Burke. I have with Daryl Sutter. So, yeah, I think I might go with
Burke. I've had many laid back moments, or a couple anyways, with Daryl. And the only one with Berkey was at Rob Kerr's Targets for Kids, which is actually Brian Burke's event. He still can come back. They didn't do it for the pandemic, but
obviously,
we'll come back again in 2021, or who knows at the rate things are going. But I remember I was doing, cause you know, those are the days that Rob wouldn't work and I would work the show and I believe you were on holidays this year. This is the last year they did it. It was 2019. And he came back and it was like 5:30. He was in the drive show. He's like, yeah, I'll come on. No problem. But he's like, I'm going to have my beer with me. And I'm like, yeah, that's no problem. Whatever. So he's got a beer. And then I've got this giant plate of food because they serve dinner at 5 o'clock. And I hadn't had time to eat it because I've been
and
on the air.
You know how Pat and Will are at a buffet. We don't mess around.
Can't get enough. And then Berkey looked at me. He goes, if you think I'm going to talk long enough for you to eat, you're sorely mistaken. And that would be the only laid-back moment I've had with Brian Burke. And we had a good laugh about it. He drank his beer while I interviewed him. And that's probably it. So, yeah, a little more intimidating for that.
Yeah, I think you'd probably go with that. Gruff. Yep, I agree with that.